Welcome to Hype, episode 63. I almost said 36 because I can't read numbers today. My name is Selena. I am back with Merima and Pam. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
And again, we recorded the Ready Player One special yesterday, so it's a busy podcasting week for us. We're waiting on Kyle. He may or may not show up. If he doesn't show up, I'll totally cut this out of the beginning. But we're hoping that he's going to come around and talk about Downton Abbey. Just for everyone who's worried, we won't talk about that. One of the big news stories of this week. We have got a lot to get into with lots of movie trailers and Marvel and Netflix industry news and music news and all kinds of stuff. But before we do that, let me just remind you of the contact information as always. You can, of course, find Hype Podcast on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. Up in the left-hand corner, there are these little lines that you can click on and go to podcasts and find our post and leave us comments if you think that there's anything you would like us to discuss, or if you have any comments on things that we talked about last week. You can also find us on Twitter at HypableHype. And you can find us on Instagram at HypableHype, which is, I nag, and people actually do post stuff, so that's fantastic. So I'm very pleased with that. And before we get into the news as well, of course, we're going to talk about what we did in fandom this week in our How We Hype segment. So let's start with Pam, because I can't wait to hear about this.
I know, this is like one of your absolute favorite things is in this thing that I did. So I had some time to kill when I was out in LA, and I was like, I would rather go to the movies than sit in traffic. So I went to see Ricky and the Flash, which of course stars Meryl Streep. And I want to preface this by saying that up until I got into the theater, all I had seen for this movie was the poster, and I was like, oh, okay, Meryl Streep's in it, this will be interesting. And so I had no idea what was really going to be about going in, and lo and behold, to my surprise, whose name do I see pop up in the credits at the beginning of the movie but Sebastian Stan's.
Oh my god,
who is of course Selena's
like
favorite,
my two favorite things in one
and
movie.
I told her that I feel like Sebastian Stan has been following me since like we brought him up a few weeks ago on this podcast. So not necessarily a bad thing, but just kind of really random. Yay. But the movie is actually really, really good. And for those of you guys who don't know very much about it, like I didn't, it stars Meryl Streep as this kind of runaway mother who flees her family in the Midwest to pursue her dreams of becoming a rock star. And she plays in this like super cool, like band in the Southern California area, and then she ends up having to go back home because her daughter, who is already an adult, is kind of going through this quarter life crisis because her husband decides to leave her. So she goes back and tries to reconnect with her family and stuff like that, which is really hard because she's been away for so long and they feel really abandoned. So it was really well done. It's actually written by Diablo Cody, who, of course, did Juno. It's not, it's a little bit more serious as far as subject matter, but definitely very enjoyable. So if you're looking for something to go see, I would definitely recommend that.
I'm seeing it this weekend. I am so
because
excited.
Because Sebastian Stan, right?
What are you talking about? Totally not that reason. I wanted to see it before I knew he was in it because Meryl Streep. And I saw the trailer for it, and I just think it looks really good. And I think I love Diablo Cody. Blah, blah, I can't say her name. Diablo Cody as well.
She's got like such a good like rocker voice too.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she can pretty much do it all.
She can do anything. She's fantastic. A movie that I did see this week though is Inside Out. Can you believe it's finally in cinemas, you guys?
It's finally out.
I know. So it was actually funny. I did a fake laugh, but I laughed on the inside for real.
My work here is done.
So my emotions were laughing in my head. So I mean, this is gonna sound really strange because I know it's been out for like months and everyone's kind of over it now. But I really liked it. I really liked the emotions. My favorite bit was the end when you got to see inside everyone else's head. Like, I think that was so funny. The dog and the cat and the people. The only thing I was wondering, and I was wondering if you guys felt the same, was that Riley took things maybe a little too hard. I don't know. Like, I feel bad saying this. I know she was 11, but I don't know. I mean, I guess most kids have experienced moving house and being disappointed with stuff. Mm. And I know that it was the point of the story and it was like the whole thing. Everyone could relate to it, but I couldn't help watching it and think, I wonder if kids who like have had worse stuff happen to them are like rolling their eyes. Like, what is this girl's deal? You know?
Well, I think that at that age, there's very little in the real world that bothers you.
But so, I think that's an, I mean, I that's what I was sort of taking issue with is that I don't think that's true. I think that most 11-year-olds have probably experienced really traumatic things like death or like, I don't know, like accidents or whatever, like moving sort of feels like the leap. Maybe that's just like...
I will say that, like, for example, the first person that ever died, like that was close to me, that happened when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard. But I was like, you know, I was sad for like a week or two and then life goes on. But in contrast, my mother was like, oh, JK, guys, like, I hope you don't like the school you're going to too much and all these kids you've known since you were five, because we're moving to Texas, maybe. And I had a meltdown over that when I was, you know, about the age Riley would be. But it, I think it just depends on the kid. But like for me at that age, I'm just trying to like relate to like what they might have been thinking. But I think... Like that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And like uprooting to a place that like was so different from what we've ever known. And we had gone to visit and stuff like that before we moved. And I was like, oh my God, please don't let this be a thing that's going to happen. And like we didn't end up moving. But at the time, it was like a big deal for both me and my brother. So.
But then it's probably just me just not managing to emphasize at all because I or empathize at all because I like we started moving around when I was four. We moved to Italy for 2 years and then we moved back and then we moved around the country. So I was like moving house, moving school, really? But I get it. And my mother was like, you just don't understand how tough it can be to move out. So I understood it and it didn't like bother me that much. And then I started thinking about the science of it all. I was like, what does it mean that this guy's stealing memories? Like, what is the long-term effect of this? So I basically what I'm trying to say is that I didn't feel like I was the target audience for this movie, but I loved
like,
it.
I feel like I know you want to move on, but I feel like the whole point of Inside Out was that the reason she overreacted was because her emotions were not in balance. Like at the start, she is not having a great time. But I mean, I thought that the point was that, you know, she would have adjusted and she would have been fine, except then she lost her like two primary emotions, kind of. And so she's being steered by like the three worst ones, fear and anger and disgust. Like, not a great combination for like reaching acceptance with the new, you know, reaching acceptance with the new situation. So I think that was kind of the point, was that like, yes, this was a big kind of upheaval for her, but that she would have got through it fine, except that she was like suppressing or, you know, whatever the metaphor that you decide to read into it.
For sure.
Those like particular emotions. And so I don't think, you know, they're not going to be like, I mean, Pixar stabs you in the feelings, but they're not going to like make you sit through a movie about, I don't know, like some super traumatic childhood ordeal or whatever.
Of course. Like, you know, couldn't have it be.
Yeah. So that's why, like, I think the moving house thing. But anyway.
But I think I absolutely agree with that. I don't, it's not that I was like, oh, I would have done this differently. It was just when the experience of watching the movie, that put me off because I couldn't stop thinking about it. But that's it's not the movie's issue. It was just my issue because I did think it was amazing and I loved, because the point, but that's what I mean about the target audience, because I do feel like some of the points were very, transparent because it was sort of maybe meant for kids a little bit more, or kids and their parents. Hold on, I'm gonna add Kyle in just a second. He's here. But so like because I was looking at this thinking the whole point about embracing your sadness, like that was sort of very obvious from the beginning. And then you had to sort of wait for it to play out. But I was thinking, if you're like a kid or like say my brother or someone who doesn't really have a lot of sort of emotional doesn't have that emotional language, then I think having it cut out for you that clearly and having that point be like, well, you have to let sadness rule you sometimes so you can be happy, like, was very important. And I think it meant something to him. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, it meant a lot to their children or just to people who are maybe a little bit emotionally not quite there. So I think that was fantastic. And I love the movie for that. And I think it was Andrew who said that like everybody should see this movie. And I 100% agree with that. I think it was just that was really great. It was very obvious, but that's a good thing. Sometimes movies need to be obvious, I think. And that's it. That's all I got. I'm sitting here playing with my... Hey, oh, you're here. I was going to wait to add you, but here you are. Because I was just going on an inside-out spiel. I was just going to say, I'm sitting here with my little sadness doll that I got in the cinema. And I love it. It's so cute.
I'm so glad you finally saw it. Oh, my God.
I know. And I just talked about it for 10 minutes. So, Kyle is here. What did you do this week, Kyle?
I read Ready Player One.
Oh, basically. You did. That's true.
In a rush.
Spoiler alert for our special.
It's so funny because, like, I read it and I've read half of it ever since we started talking about it. And I had to, like, reread the entire thing because I forgot the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's what I did.
But you did it. Yes.
Yes.
And you resisted my suggestion that you read the audiobook, which I have to say from several listeners that... Will Wheaton does the audiobook, and he's really awesome, and he does amazing audiobooks. So if you haven't read Ready Player One yet, I just want to recommend this on here too. Check out the audiobook, because it's apparently really great. And finally, Marima! Oh, you saw... What? You went to John Oliver? What is happening?
Yeah, so I think I may have mentioned once or 100 times my deep and eternal love for my husband, John Oliver, and his show Last Week Tonight. So unfortunately for everyone else, Last Week Tonight is off for 2 weeks, but luckily for me, it's off because John Oliver was doing a stand-up tour of Australia.
Oh, my God. So, I didn't know this.
So I went to see him last week. It was, you know, very different from what he does on the show. Is a lot more personal, none of the flashy graphics or anything. It was very much a straight stand-up show. But I was literally crying with laughter, and that was the general experience from other people I know who went. And he's just he's very, very good. And I think it's kind of easy to forget that these people started off in, like, stand-up where they just had to write it all themselves and they needed to be, like, very quick and very sharp when they're doing such well-produced shows. Mm. But his discussion with the audience, there are a couple, like, hecklers in a positive way, like, positive hecklers, and his responses to them were very, very funny. So I saw that and it was amazing, and, you know, I would have liked to go again, but of course he sold out in like 5 minutes. So I was just pleased with my with my one show. And then the other thing I've been doing this week is actually listening to a new album, which is Badlands from Halsey, and this was released just last week, and I really, really, really recommend it. It's amazing. It's her first studio album, and she's a singer-songwriter. She's from America. I want to say she's only like 20 years old or something, which is so depressing.
Wow. Yeah.
But the album is, you know, it's kind of in the same line of like Lorde or Banks or, you know, those kinds of artists, but a little darker with kind of a twist, and really, really beautiful. And it's the whole thing is like this concept album. And so I don't know in the States if it's been getting a lot of airplay. Maybe some. There isn't really like a standout single because they all kind of tie in together. But yeah, if you're into like kind of electro, like synth, dark pop, then you should definitely check it out. I've been listening to it for ages. My favorite song is Gasoline at the moment. So if you want to, a taster of it, there's Gasoline, and also Young God is amazing. So yeah.
Awesome. Great. Well, that sounds all sounds amazing. I am so jealous, but happy for you about John Oliver. That's fantastic.
Oh. I love him.
I love him too. Just take a moment to appreciate John Oliver. I hope all our listeners are watching John Oliver, by the way, because, oh my God, you learn so much. That's like, this is what I know about America from John Oliver and from Andrew's Millennial Podcast. That's pretty much what I know. And it's pretty great and pretty scary. And you know what? I it's enough for me. So moving on now to the news of this week. I made this amazing plan of just me, Merma, and Pam. And now Kyle is here. So we're just going to try to... He's adding stories now. So this is on air editing of the doc. That is totally fine. I love when things are unpredictable. No, I don't actually mind it. So now we're all ready. I'm still going to go first because I think I have the most awesome story this week. This broke on the day that we recorded the last podcast, and I put it into the doc straight away because I wanted to be sure we brought it up. So if you've been checking Instagram at all, you'll probably have seen that Amy Schumer has been up to all kinds of shenanigans, which have included Jennifer Lawrence, her new BFF. We actually wrote up a story, I think, last week about the two of them taking a vacation together where they rode on a, like, water scooter thing and
a jet ski,
yeah, and that inspired me to ride
a scooter.
Well, what do I know, it looks like a scooter and it goes on the water. I actually went on one of those in Malta just because I saw them doing it. I was like, I want to do it too, and it was so much fun. But anyway, this is not about me. So they have been hanging out more, which means dancing on pianos and apparently riding a movie together, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey style. She told at a Mockingjay 2 press event, Jennifer Lawrence told the New York Times that she and Amy Schumer are going to star in the film that they're writing, and it's a comedy centering on two sisters. She said, "We're almost done writing. It just flowed out of us. We've got about 100 pages right now." So, I mean, that is all kinds of awesome, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess. Does anyone know if Jennifer Lawrence can, you know, write
right?
a screenplay?
That's what I was thinking too.
Look, I'm sure it'll be great. I always think that when stories like this come out, and I'm not saying that obviously people can't diversify and do other things, but I'm always like, that's really cool. I will just wait a little bit and see how that turns out. So that's kind of how I'm feeling. But, you know, I really enjoyed Trainwreck, and Amy Schumer is obviously a great writer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If she's like carrying the project, then and like Pam said, Jennifer Lawrence is kind of contributing like through a more just like conceptual way, not so much like, and then this happens, and then here's the next line in the screenplay, then like maybe that'll work. Or maybe Jennifer Lawrence has like a secret talent for writing screenplays. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But I mean, it's whatever. Definitely exciting, I think, is the takeaway here. I was excited when I read the story, and I'm excited to see what the hell they're going to come up with. It's kind of like a match made in heaven, isn't it?
In comedy heaven. All right, well, some movies that we do have release dates for. We had a lot of trailers this week. I'm going to call this the trailer park segment that I just made up by myself. So we'll start off with Dystopian because, you know, speaking of Jennifer Lawrence, The Fifth Wave, which was kind of the new big, everyone was thinking it was going to be like the next big Hunger Games, and it was super successful. They're finally making the movie of it, which we have heard about for ages. It's starring Chloe Moretz, and we got the very first trailer just today, actually. And it looks really, really good, I think. The Fifth Wave, for people who don't know, is kind of a, well, it's sort of dystopian, but, you know, it starts off in, like, our world, but it's really an alien invasion story, which is really cool because it's been a really long time since we've had, like, a fun alien story.
Yeah,
and the first
Pixels.
Two books are out. There's The Fifth Wave and then The Infinite Sea, both by Rick Yancey, and we're waiting for the third book, so I'm guessing they're making The Fifth Wave movie with the thought of continuing it on into the trilogy. But I don't know if you guys have read it, but did you check out the trailer?
No, not yet, because it just broke, like, right before I went to sleep, so no.
Yeah, I have not been able to watch it yet.
Guys,
but everyone's so excited about
it.
This. I didn't even know what this was. Like, The Fifth Wave, never heard about it before.
Really?
So, really? Yeah. That's so weird, because it was such, like I guess Marima and I were on like book hype when this came out and we were reading it, and it was just like everywhere.
But yeah,
maybe
I know.
Maybe that's just because we were like focused on it more.
No, this was
a huge everywhere.
Book. When it was released, it came out in 2013, I want to say, and then Infinite Sea would have been last year.
That was probably when I was on hiatus, so I didn't pay attention.
Yeah,
it is totally like a book you would like too.
Yeah,
I feel.
I think you should check
it's
it
up
out.
Your alley.
Okay.
Yeah, and the third book is going to be out next year. So,
but is Sebastian Stan starring in the movie though? That's
well,
the big question.
No,
we can hope.
Hey, there are new characters in the second one, so Oh, so maybe so he'll turn up in one of those. Yeah, so that's going to be released in 2016. Here's a film you might have
heard. Yeah, I was going to say, Sebastian Stan starring in this movie, which is totally about me.
The Danish Girl. We had the first trailer for this. This is the Eddie Redmayne biopic that is about... Oh, I don't know how to say his name. I'm very sorry.
Maybe I can say his name.
How do you say it?
I haven't loaded the story. Hold on. Ina Wegener. That's so not a Danish name. Oh, I do know the story. Okay.
Yeah. So this is a story of the first person who had male to female reassignment surgery, sex reassignment surgery, and stars Eddie Redmayne. Everyone's already saying, like, okay, Oscar nomination. He is really amazing in this. I think this looks really, really beautiful. Has anyone watched this one?
Yeah, I watched it. It looks good. I'm excited that it's in Denmark.
Right? Did you know this story? I was actually curious when I was reading it before.
I didn't. I had no idea about the story. When he was first cast, I think I wrote up an article about it, and I had to look into it. It's nothing that I've ever come across before.
Well, I'm sure this will be bringing it to wider attention. It's actually released at the end of this year, so it's not that far off.
You know, and
I was going to say, it also stars the girl who was in Man from U.N.C.L.E., my new favorite movie.
Yes,
so,
and she, Alicia Vikander, she was also in A Royal Affair and that robot movie. What's it called?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah. That robot movie. But you know what this is? This could potentially be a good thing because it's the Danish girl. Maybe they'll come to Denmark for the premiere. Maybe I'll get to interview Eddie Redmayne. You know, the trains are moving now. I'm going to have to look into this.
Maybe I'll have to fly to Denmark and kill you in your sleep.
What?
If you interview Eddie Redmayne, yeah.
That sounds like an overreaction.
I don't think so. Oh, she's speaking also of going killing to be people. We're getting there. Except first of all, I have to be excited because Alicia is also in the new Bourne movie starring my other husband, Matt Damon.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Connections everywhere. But yes, wrapping up our trailers for this week, we also had the American trailer for Macbeth starring Michael Fassbender, and it looks very violent, as Macbeth is super violent. It looks really, really good, I think. It's definitely an interesting take. It's a new take on Shakespeare. It also stars Marianne Cotillard, who is amazing. She looks fantastic as Lady Macbeth. And they're going for a very big scale, I guess, for this story, which can often be played like quite intimately. They mm-hmm. seem to be going quite big with it. So that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. I like Macbeth. I was in the play once and I was Macbeth.
Really?
And I got to kill myself. Spoiler alert.
Oh, my God.
I know this. I remember this story because you also told a certain actor this during a certain interview you did a couple of years ago.
I did. Oh, yeah. Alex Laos was in this, wasn't he?
Yes.
And I just blabbed to him.
I did want to say that, like, Fassbender, I feel like, has been having a pretty good week because we also got a photo of him as the assassin in Assassin's Creed, which also stars Marion Cotillard. So I guess these two are like besties now. They're just in everything together, which is so funny.
I love it when that happens with actors. That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a teaser trailer, if that counts. Not really, though, because it's the same footage. It was for Star Wars The Force Awakens, and we got a new short trailer that was posted on Instagram. And I'm pretty sure Star Wars had this like agreement with Instagram because it was posted literally the same like hour that Instagram announced that they can now do widescreen photos, so you don't have to like do square photos. And so this came out like right when they announced that. And so there's not that much new footage, but the new footage that there is basically the scene where the evil guy has the lightsaber and it's like
Kylo Ren.
Yeah, that guy. You know that epic lightsaber with the main one and then the two on the side. And then they shoot over to the other main character who I don't know his name is.
Wow, Kyle, why are you talking about this?
I know, I'm thinking the same thing.
My reason, I wanted to talk about this is because when they showed Finn...
Because Instagram is sideways, is that why?
No, no, it's because when they showed Finn with this blue lightsaber, he was panting. And I just, it was just so funny because I've noticed that in every single trailer that Finn is in, he's panting. Like, literally every trailer. And it's just really funny. But it's
but
a cool little glimpse
afraid.
Because...
All right, I would be panting too if I was like against that evil guy.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it was a cool little teaser trailer to show off on Instagram. But I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is because when we see that first lightsaber, like when we saw that months ago, we were wondering what the deal was, and now we're getting a first glimpse into the other side of that battle.
And so of course, the big news cool. too is that Finn has. We're going to assume that he is a Jedi unless he just has picked up the sword to protect himself, because there's nothing, I don't think, indicating that non-Jedi can't pick up lightsabers. People can pick up lightsabers and fight with it, but it's not hard. Like, if they don't have the Force, they can do it, but it's not easy for them. So Finn doesn't have to be a Jedi to pick up the lightsaber, but he might turn out to have the Force as well. So this is cool. This is a good little tidbit.
I mean, every little teaser of this new Star Wars film is going to be really epic, and it's all good. It's like Harry Potter to the point where fans like see one thing and they automatically like start analyze every possibility that one thing could mean. So it was a cool little teaser trailer. Makes you excited for December 17th.
You might even say that Harry Potter is like Star Wars.
Turn around.
It was first. Just so we don't piss off any Star Wars fans.
Cool. So are we done with A Galaxy Far, Far Away?
We are.
Yes.
Cool. Then we'll move to one that's a little closer to home. We have an awesome casting news type story for you guys. This is pretty much like our target audience's dream, because we've got Melissa Benoist, who, of course, is going to be Supergirl in the upcoming pilot, and Outlander Sam Heughan, who have signed on to star in a British romance drama that is pretty much just going to have all of us in tears at the movie theater. This is what I've decided. So pretty much what's going on is that she plays an American university student that goes to study in Oxford, who meets kind of like a rough around the edges teaching assistant, who is played by Sam. And then they get closer when she realizes that he is dying from cancer, and the story is going to go from there. So that should be interesting and also very tear-jerky. It's like Nicholas Sparks, but not Nicholas Sparks, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This just makes me want to watch movies about people doing study abroad. Like, did they exist?
Right?
Because I want to watch this now. Now I want to watch this movie right now.
What is the movie with Felicity Jones and the guy from Star Trek? It's so good.
Oh, it's is it A Lot Like Love?
Oh,
no.
That movie is amazing. Oh, no, not A Lot Like Love. It's
Like Crazy.
Like Crazy. Like Crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And there's Love, Rosie, too. Kind of.
That, yeah, I watched that recently.
Right. Mm. Did you like it?
Yeah, because it has my boy Finnick in it.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like I'm cheating on all these guys with all these other guys.
But more importantly, like, I'm really glad you brought up Like Crazy, because if you're listening to this, then you want kind of a tear-jerking romance movie, like, go watch that movie, because it's so amazing. And if you don't know, they actually ad-libbed like most of the movie. So the way the director went into making that was he took the two actors and he was like, so this is kind of like the basics of what happens, and I don't care how you get there with like the words that are going to come out of your mouth, but just make sure you hit this point. And so it's a lot of it's actually improv, and it's like, it's so beautifully done. So go watch that while you wait for this awesome movie that's going to be coming out soon.
The soundtrack is really good too. I have it.
Oh, yeah.
So nice.
And Jennifer Lawrence is in it for like a brief moment.
Yes, she is. So thanks for diverting us down that path. It's it's a very good movie, though. So moving on now to some Marvel news. We pushed it down in the show, and I took one for the team, and I took one for Marima, because I figured you were kind of sick about talking about Marvel. So although this is kind of significant news, and we're going to try not to spend the whole podcast talking about it, even though I kind of want to. just after a few days after we recorded last week, some new promo art for Captain America: Civil War revealed the teams for the movie. So who will be on Iron Man's side and who will be on Captain America's side. This artist is beautiful. And I think, I mean, just looking at the artwork, I'm like blown away by it. But let's take a look at who is actually on each team. So on Iron Man's team, the first promo picture shows Black Widow, which is, I think, a little bit surprising for people who've watched the Captain America movies and haven't read the comics, because it was for me, and War Machine, and Black Panther, and The Vision. And on the other side, look at me knowing all the names, guys. On the other side, we have Hawkeye, we have Ant-Man, we have Sharon Carter, which is cool because, like, a female. We can't have enough of those. We have, obviously, Captain America, we have the Falcon, and Falcon's pet bird, and Bucky. And I think the thing that people sort of pointed to first is that there's no sign of Scarlet Witch, who, of course, was a big player in Ultron, and we know she's going to be in this movie. So it's kind of weird that they're including people like Black Panther and Ant-Man, but they're not including Scarlet Witch.
Maybe it's a surprise as to what team she'll be on.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Spider-Man is not it either. But he has, like, cameo or whatever, fight cameo or something. But I like it. I like it a lot. And I'm, like, I was just, you know, keeping with the trend of Sebastian Stan, I was just so excited to see him on the poster. It's like, I mean, seriously, Captain America's team has, like, all of my favorite people, which I like. And I think it's, and I don't know what you guys think about Sharon Carter being so prominent, because she's so new and she's, like, the only person on these posters who isn't, like, a legit superhero yet, I guess. Though I'm hoping she will be. And I've said before, I hope they don't try to shoe in a romance in this movie because it looks so crowded. But female power, I'm all for that.
Yeah, cool.
Are you not excited? I feel like you're not excited.
I am excited, but I just can't. It's like a protective mechanism, guys. I can't get excited about this movie because, like, what if they ruin Captain America? I'm sure it will be good. I am, like, not worried about that. I mean, you know, the concept art is maybe less exciting if you kind of already know who's on each side.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone's freaking out because, like you said, Black Widow and Cap are like, oh, they're like frenemies.
But, and Hawkeye, too. It's like she's going against all her friends.
Right. So, I mean, that's cool, whatever. I don't care. I want to see the trailer. I just want to see some footage. I don't want to see concept art. And I'm just a needy person who wants more than Marvel is willing to give me, obviously.
Yeah, and we have to wait for, like, another month for the trailer, right?
No, I don't even know when their D23 one. Are they releasing that in, like, a month? I don't even know.
So I'm not sure. At least we'll have to probably wait a long time. Now here's where the magic of podcasting kicks in, and it has to be released today because we just said that. So do
true.
Your thing, yeah. Magic.
As soon as we finish.
Yeah. So speaking about Marvel, we have just a bit of other news, which sort of speaks to your point about being worried about them ruining Captain America. And I am very excited to hear what you have to say about this story, Merrimack, because, you know, you obviously know a little bit more about this than I do, though I do my best to know as much as I can. Yesterday, we posted a news story that a sort of power shuffle at Marvel and Disney has kind of changed the potential way that the MCU is going to be, essentially, because Kevin Feige, who is the quote-unquote showrunner of the MCU, he was the person who brought Marvel Studios out of, you know, obscurity and with Iron Man, and he's produced pretty much all of the Marvel movies going forward. He has apparently been, according to the Hollywood Reporter, he's been struggling reporting to the Marvel Entertainment CEO Ike Perlmutter, and they call him, like, infamously micromanaging the movies. He has complained about that and has been sort of relocated, going further into Disney, because Disney already owns Marvel, but now it's like they are further entrenched in Disney, because Kevin Feige will now be reporting directly to the chairman of Disney, who I keep calling the CEO, and people are like, that's so wrong. And I'm like, but they're just words. I don't understand. But so the Disney chairman, Alan Horn, putting Marvel Studios on par with Pixar and Lucasfilm, who are obviously under Disney quote-unquote control, but they do have their own very distinct sections. Like, they are autonomous to a point. So basically, Feige is happy about this, and this probably means, if he and Horn work well together, that his vision for the cinematic universe will be carried out more fluidly. So basically, if you like what Feige is doing, and if you like you've read his interviews and you've seen what he has planned, then this is good news, because he basically has gotten more control. Potential downside to this, one of them, is that the TV department of Marvel will still be reporting, that Jeff Loeb is leading that, and he'll still be reporting to Perlmutter, so we'll likely see even less continuity from TV to movieverse than we already have. That is everything. That's all the facts. So, do you have thoughts, Marima, about this?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know. A lot of what people are thinking about is very much based on, like, speculation, right, that comes from unnamed sources and et cetera. Basically, what people think is that Perlmutter is notoriously very controlling of the budget. Mm-hmm. And so some people think that the reason that Marvel is not very diverse is because, like, he only wants to cast people who he knows are going to bring in the money, and he doesn't want to pay them very much either. Like, Marvel is notorious for paying their lead stars, like, way less than they would get for another film or another franchise, and locking them into these, like, really intense... I mean, we see they get locked in for, like, 6-9 movie contracts for really not much money, unless they're Robert Downey Jr. comparatively to what they could get, like, on a different project. So... a lot of that has been attributed to him. So what people are thinking is that now that Feige is no longer reporting to him, that maybe we will see some increased diversity in the casting, because there is this very, like, there was this story going around for a while that when Don Cheadle, was hired on Iron Man, I think in the second movie he comes in, and and he actually replaces a different actor whose name I can't remember, and I apologize.
Terrence Howard,
yeah. And so when he replaced Terrence Howard, that Perlmutter, like, paid Don Cheadle a very, very small amount of money, because he said that all black people look the same. And so, like, that's a story that's been out there for a while. So, like, people are not a huge fan of this guy. That said, like, Kevin Feige doesn't have a great history in terms of representation either.
Yeah.
Like, his comments, particularly on Black Widow, I'm thinking of, where he's basically said, like, hey, if we knew people wanted her, like, we would make it. Or, like, oh, if there was a story there, we would make it, or whatever, which is, you know, nothing. That's ridiculous. So... yeah, it's kind of hard to know. It's difficult to know where the, like, creative push is coming from between the two of them. I think the most interesting thing for this is actually, as you mentioned at the end, the possible, like, increased disconnect between the movie and TV sides, because that's always really been a big strength of Marvel, that they actually tie in very well, the what they've done in the TV world and in the film world. And if they change that, I don't think fans will be very happy. So I can't see them, like, intentionally moving away from that model, you know, because it's working out really well for them being able to kind of link them together. So I'm sure that part of this will be them navigating a way to, like, continue to do that. But it's obviously more difficult when one person isn't overseeing, like, everything.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of, I mean, the TV thing, I'm not really watching the shows. I really want to get into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., waiting for it to come on Netflix. But I think that's what I sort of felt, oh, that's kind of a shame. And also, again, with Feige, the diversity thing, also his comments on like a gay character being introduced in the next 10 years, you're sort of just left going, what is happening? Like, who are you? What is, but it, that said, I mean, these are all sort of our personal gripes. Obviously, there are lots of people who are kind of like, oh, I'm kind of sick of Marvel because it's the same. But there are also lots of people who love the movies and love what Feige is doing. And so ultimately, I said this in that article I did about directors and studios and who has the power. And I think ultimately, if there's one person in charge who can see their vision through, then whatever that vision is, it's gonna be better than if like three people are trying to have each their own thing and they're trying to put together this mass of mixed visions in one. And I think, I mean, obviously this sort of Kevin Feige getting more control means he'll probably clash more with the directors. But again, it's nothing that we can say yet. It's just kind of industry talk, which I think is fascinating. So I always love bringing it up. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's exciting. I'm excited. And again, with Kevin Feige, I might not agree with everything he does, but I'm not in charge of Marvel. So I'm looking forward to seeing him being able to do more of what he wants to do and what that's going to end up being. We'll have to wait and see.
Okay, so moving on to a little bit of sad news. Over the weekend, we heard that Wes Craven, who is known for Scream movies in particular, amazing Hollywood, I was going to say like amazing legendary, amazing horror director, passed away from cancer. He was only 76. So most people know him from Scream, and he created Freddy Krueger, who was in Nightmare on Elm Street, although he... Oh, wait, yes, he did direct that. God, all the way back in the 80s. Oh, my God, I feel so old. But actually, part of the reason I want to talk about this is because he directed a lesser-known film that I actually really loved, Red Eye, mm-hmm. which came out in the mid-2000s. It starred Rachel McAdams. It was a, like, horror thriller, kind of, about this woman who's, like, kidnapped on a plane. And it was so interesting and so, so tense. And I actually didn't realize until I heard the news that he had died that he was the person who directed that, because it's kind of a little different from the other stuff that he has done. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's directed some amazing things and like worked on written things and produced, you know, everything. He's kind of had his hand on like a lot of horror things from since like the early 80s, basically. And I think he was also an executive producer on Scream, yeah. on the new Scream TV show, which is on MTV. So I'm sure that will be a big loss for them as well.
And I think that's kind of what it comes down to. Obviously, he was 76. He's had a long life and he very impactful in the industry. I think in terms of him dying, it's sad, but he was 76. I mean, it's respectable, sort of. It's he's had a long life. But I think the thing people are sort of really sad about is that he did have a lot of projects still going on. You know, he was still working and he was still involved with things. So it's kind of, it does feel kind of very sudden, you know?
Yeah, but it's always sad news.
Very sad news. And people have been posting very nice tributes to him online. Now for the next story.
It's also sad. Because
but this is fiction, so it's a different kind of sad. Yeah,
it's very, very obviously. It's Downton Abbey Series 6 trailer has finally been released, like the full trailer. We've gotten little glimpses earlier this past year, but the Series 6 trailer was released and they announced the UK premiere date. It's going to actually premiere this month, which is crazy, in 19 days, so on September 20th. And the new trailer is... so heartbreaking because it's basically the entire cast and characters apparently saying goodbye to the house that is Downton Abbey. And for anyone who's listening, we all know that this was coming and we all knew that they were going to tie up all the loose ends this coming season. But it's very heartbreaking when you see like the butlers and you see the characters actually leaving the house for the first time, which it seems to be the case. And it's going to be really unique because people were wondering how they're going to end this, and having them actually vacate the house makes sense. I don't think anyone really saw that coming until now, but it's going to be so sad. I know none of you watch it, so none of you can like identify with my feels. But
yeah, of course. I watched the trailer just because everyone was talking about it, and it did play on the emotions a lot.
Yeah, it really
did. I think I'm gonna watch this season. I think I'm gonna watch the last season. Is that weird? I haven't.
No.
I watched the first two seasons, and then as with most TV shows, like I just forget that it exists. I'm just bad. We all know I'm terrible at watching TV. But the trailer looked really good, and I think, like you said, it's really interesting for me to see like them moving on from their house. And I guess I'm curious about, like, I don't even know what year it's set in. So that will be interesting. I don't know.
It's now evolved to sometime in the mid to late 20s.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine it's like in the late 20s. So I'm kind of curious about how whatever's happening at Downton like ties in with, I guess, maybe broader changes. Because from memory, when I watched it, they did a very good job of tying in the changes at the house with like what was happening in society, which I did enjoy.
Really did. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that would be a fun article to write. Like, I could review Downton Abbey season 6, having watched none of the rest of it and having hardly remembering the first two. I might do that. But I don't know. The trailer kind of sucked me in. I just, like, want to be a part of it. Yeah. Everyone's, like, talking about the trailer. And I'm like, oh, I want to, like, I mean, it's sad, but I don't know who any of these people are. Yeah. And I wish I did. And I'm obviously not going to watch, like, five series before 3 weeks away, so maybe I'll just watch it and like just make up the backstory in my head.
the really interesting part is that this premiered during the X Factor, and it was everyone was having a good time. Everyone's like, yeah, X Factor, woo. And then like this comes on with like Time to Say Goodbye sung by Lauren Aquilina, and like if you're gonna kill the mood, you're going to play that song, and you're going to play that song during a Downton Abbey season finale, series finale.
Or but. Set the mood for sadness. Sadness! I'm holding her now.
But yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome.
So now that you guys have cried over Downton Abbey, I've got something that I'm actually really excited about. We're going to get a Walking Dead one-off special. And so this is actually such a cool idea, I feel like. So what's going to go down is that the people behind The Walking Dead are going to produce a 30-minute special that is going to premiere online, but it's also going to air in pieces during commercial breaks of this season's Walking Dead. And it's going to tell the story of it's a standalone story, so it's just a one-off, like I mentioned before. But it's going to follow a group of passengers who board a plane and are then faced with a walker attack. And the kicker is that the person that survives this attack up in the air is going to join Fear the Walking Dead in season 2. So that's kind of a really cool way to do this. And I think it's going to make the commercial breaks during the regular show that's going to air next month already. God, I can't believe it's already September, you guys. That's crazy. Anyways, so it's going to make the commercial breaks between episodes of The Walking Dead and stuff like that so much more fun, because you're going to get this like tiny little thing to look forward to. I'm not sure if I'll be watching it all in one go or if I'll be watching it during commercial breaks, but it looks really awesome. I think this is a really good idea. So
I'm going to watch this. I don't watch The Walking Dead, but here's a fact about me. I really love bottle episodes on TV, which for people who don't know, they're the episodes where basically they're trying to save money because they're going over budget. So they like stick everyone on a set they already have, or like they usually use an existing set. They stick everyone there. Sometimes they take out the lead stars for like whatever reason in the story, the real reason being so they don't have to pay them.
Yeah.
And they just have an episode set there. And I really, really love them. I think it can be such an interesting use of format. And so we should have talked about this after Wes Craven, because I feel like it ties in with my love of Red Eye. But a plane is like such a good location for an episode like that. Mm-hmm. And
a plane, an airport. Like,
I can commit to that. And and maybe, who knows, maybe it will inspire me to like watch The Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead.
Or awesome. You could start Fear the Walking Dead now because we're only 2 episodes in. I mean, I'm just...
I don't know. That seems like too much. That seems like too much
commitment all in one go.
Yeah. 2 episodes. I don't know. I haven't even finished watching Hannibal season 3, which is a show I genuinely like watching. So.
Well, I mean, priorities, understandable.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about Hannibal later in the show, but I just want to move through and get through the rest of the news because we still have a lot to get through. So the next story is another industry story about Netflix, which announced a few days ago that they are dropping a major partnership with a cable channel called Epix, who is basically the gatekeeper of content from the movie studios MGM, Lionsgate, and Paramount. So that means starting this month, apparently, according to this blog post by Netflix SEO Ted Sarandos, movies like The Hunger Games and World War Z will no longer be available to stream on Netflix. And Sarandos says that the reason for this is that, he says, while many of these movies are popular, they are also widely available on cable and other subscription platforms. So they are basically he says, we're aiming to build a better movie experience for you, which means focusing more on original content that Netflix has been producing more and more of, not just the TV shows, but also the movies. They have a lot of movie deals with people like Adam Sandler and Mark and Jay Duplass. So, I mean, in the comments, this story has sort of taken a life of its own on Facebook, which is really nice to see. People are really engaging in some good discussion there. And people seem sort of very, very, very split between, on one hand, saying, well, I really enjoy Netflix's original content. On the other hand, saying, well, I came to Netflix because it was a place that I could stream existing movies and TV shows, and the original content is sort of like a bonus. So it feels like Netflix is trying to transition into a genuine channel. You know, it's a genuine production company which has TV shows and movies of its own, but which isn't the place you'd subscribe for access to movies and TV shows. For me personally, this is very upsetting. Not only do I not watch a lot of Netflix originals just because I simply do not have time, but also because for international people, even though Netflix is a lot worse in Europe than it is in America in terms of content, having a place where you can legitimately access legally TV shows and movies from around the world is very, very, very helpful and very, very important. And Netflix came in at a time, it solved a lot of issues that people had watching content from each other's countries. Like, even though it was delayed by a couple of months, you could still say, well, you know, I'll just wait for it to come on Netflix and I can check out this TV show and I don't have to wait for like 2 years for the TV show to come to Denmark or whatever. So I feel like Netflix is losing what made it Netflix, personally. On the other hand, a lot of people enjoy what Netflix is becoming. So you win some, you lose some, I guess. Do you guys have any thoughts on this?
I think it's insane. Sorry.
See, this is the thing. I'm like the only person who doesn't use Netflix, maybe. Yeah, so like,
Came to Australia like 2 months ago or something.
Yeah, it came to Australia very recently and I haven't signed up because, as we know, like, I don't watch TV anyway. So it's just not really something that I need in my life. But I guess I'm kind of curious in a sort of objective way if, like, this was always the plan for Netflix, because they have really built up, like, a whole list of very successful, very well-regarded, popular original shows now. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of wonder if maybe, I don't know, like, it would be interesting to me if they had kind of had the streaming service as like an on the side thing while they were developing these, or at least in the last few years, if this has kind of been the direction they've been heading.
Yeah.
Because they have seemed to be doing like more and more original things, and they've become like a totally legitimate
production,
like, I guess like a production company in a way. So I don't know. Yeah, I can definitely see why people are frustrated about it. I don't know. Like, are there not other, like, ways that people can stream things? Are there not other services that provide that?
Well, no, that's the thing. Isn't there, over here, there aren't that many. There are some Danish ones, but they're obviously very limited. And it's like a, usually it's like a pay-by-pay subscription model. So you pay for each movie, you don't pay for the streaming. Like iTunes, there is HBO Nordic, but that's obviously very limited. And there is, we don't have access to Amazon streaming, and we don't have access to Hulu. So Netflix was kind of like our thing, you know? And again, as I said, we do have some Danish ones, but they are very limited. So for me personally, this is a kind of a blow potentially down the line.
And for the US, even, like, basically what he's saying is like, oh, we're like getting rid of the stuff that you can like already watch in like your cable providers and stuff. Yeah. It's like, you can go watch that there. Like, people have started giving up cable because one, is expensive, and two, you can stream stuff like this normally on like Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff. So it's like really frustrating, and plus just the experience is just worse when you're looking forward to watching your favorite movies, or like you're looking forward to when your movie is getting released on Netflix, because it's all on like one box or all on your PlayStation or something. And like, now if you want it, you're going to have to do research, because you don't know, one, which providers carry the movie that you want and which networks have it. And if you don't subscribe to those networks, then you're going to have to buy it, in which case you might as well just rent it from iTunes or something.
Right. Yeah.
So it's I just
feel like it's such a first world problem. Like, there are other ways. I understand more Selena, but then at the same time, I think like a smart company would, like Hulu would, like, now go, okay, there's an open market. Like, let's extend to places where we have previously blocked, so that, you know, you can subscribe or whatever. Or like a smart company would start up in Europe, like start a European subscription based, whatever. You know, I don't know. Like I said, I don't use Netflix, so I probably come from like a more objective place of just like, oh, like, this is interesting. I mean, I guess the other way they could have gone is maybe like had two models where one, you pay like a base rate and you get just the streaming services, and then you pay extra to get the original content, or like vice versa. I don't know if that would be, if people would like that or not. People would probably complain that they have to pay more money.
Huh. Yeah, so, and they did just actually jack up the prices over here too. So it's more expensive. So basically, I mean, just to wrap up, because we can talk for ages about this, and I would like to. But yeah, I mean, basically, Netflix, I think the reason people are complaining about this isn't so much that it's like a first world, oh, it's going to be harder for me. It's just that Netflix felt like the beginning of a new age of how you watch stuff. Like, you can now, instead of going, like, finding movies, like, buying them individually or going to all these different services, you had this one place where there were movies and there were TV shows, and you could stream as much as you wanted, whenever you wanted. That's still the case, but I think them announcing that they're going to focus on original content sort of feels like a step back for technology, you know, because it's this big, like, front runner of this kind of streaming model is actually taking a step back and going, actually, we just kind of want to be a production company. So I think that's what people are reacting to.
But again, like, Netflix doesn't have they had a monopoly on this. They no longer will. So like, in Australia, we saw we didn't have Netflix in Australia, like you said, until very recently. So an Australian streaming company was created, and it was created for Australian people to get like what you guys had from Netflix. And now we have Netflix, and now there's like a bit of competition because, you know, people can go from one to the other. So I am presuming, because people are, like you said, this is kind of the way people consume content now, that I don't think like Netflix is going to stop and then suddenly there won't be any way to do it. I think Netflix is going to stop and like, we will see the creation or the expansion of more companies who might already do this, or who are like stepping into the void to fill that, because, you know, obviously that's how people watch stuff now, and that's totally fine. But I get Netflix being like, we don't want to do that anymore. Like,
I get it too. Yeah, I get it. They're evolving. So the next story ties perfectly into that.
Yeah, so speaking of like original content, Variety has gotten an exclusive in which they learned that Apple is actually looking to make some original TV content in it of itself, which isn't – it's surprising in the fact that Apple is looking to make TV and movies, but it's not surprising because Apple's generally expanding everywhere. The interesting thing is whether they're going to be focusing on just TV or just movies, but no one really knows. It's all very hush-hush at the moment, as it should be, and Apple's secretive as heck. But it makes another reason why people think it makes sense is because they're about to release a new Apple TV on September 9th is when the announcement is coming. It's an upgrade to the current version, which hasn't been upgraded in 3 years. So Apple's already in the TV market in terms of providing you with the box that you can subscribe to Netflix and Hulu. And so it's not far off that they want to start actually getting deals with networks. They're starting to get all of the stuff in the Hollywood industry. So it's really interesting. People don't know what to think because Apple is an awesome company, but we don't know if they're going to start overreaching with this.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. Producing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, and basically the reason this came to light is because Apple has been contacting Hollywood executives this past few weeks. So I don't know, it might be good, it might be bad, but if it's Apple, it's generally never like terrible. So but I do work for Apple, so I'm biased.
Yeah, it is interesting.
All right, music news. We have some weird stories of music this week to wrap up the show. First, and the weirdest, is if you're a SpongeBob SquarePants fan, then your life is about to get a whole lot better because Nickelodeon have announced that they are working on the SpongeBob musical, which will be coming to Broadway. And, you know, if you think that this sounds really stupid, I wouldn't blame you, but just wait a second because it is going to have songs written by Aerosmith, by John Legend, by David Bowie. Oh my God. Cyndi Lauper. The list is ridiculous. And I mean, I don't know. They made Shrek into a musical, so I guess they can do it for SpongeBob. I just think this is very fun. And basically the list of people contributing to it is what is getting people excited right now, because otherwise we don't really know anything about it. Like, they haven't announced any casting or anything. But yeah, it's apparently will be coming to Broadway for the 2016-2017 season, but it will be opening in Chicago before that. So we will keep you updated.
I'm so excited.
Anything is announced, but yeah, so it's just so random, but so fun.
Yes.
All right. Well, if you thought the SpongeBob musical was the weirdest thing we were going to talk about, you are wrong, because now it's my turn and I get to talk about all the VMA stuff that happened that is newsworthy. So first up, we have Miley Cyrus and her dead pets. We're not going to talk about her dead pets, but that is the title of her new album, which she dropped on Sunday after the VMAs finished wrapping up. She, of course, hosted this year, which was just insane in and of itself. And the cool thing about this album is that she actually released it for free. So you can actually stream the entire 23-track album if you are so inclined to do so. So I'm just going to run down a couple of interesting things that you guys should know about this album for anybody who's interested. First of all, you should know that it's a passion project. So she funded the whole thing herself. It was $50 to make, and in comparison, Bangers took a couple of million dollars to make. That came out of RCA's pocket. RCA is, of course, her record. So that's who she kind of what am I looking for? That's who she just responds to, I guess. Like, they kind of own her. So because she funded it on her own, it actually doesn't go towards fulfilling her multi-record deal with them. So it's like she still got the albums that she's going to make over there with them. This is just it is very much a concept album. She worked on it with her mentor Wayne Coyne, who of course fronts the Flaming Lips, and she also reunited with Mike Will Made It, who was behind such hits as We Can't Stop on Bangers. So yeah, it's a little weird, it's a little kooky, but what do you expect from Miley Cyrus? I mean, she's kind of been marching to the beat of her own drum for a while now.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you only listen to one song off of this album, make sure it's Karen Don't Be Sad, because the vocals on it are amazing and it's just this really beautiful melancholy tune. So I highly recommend that track if you only listen to one thing. Don't be turned off by the first track off the album. Just go straight to Karen Don't Be Sad and listen to that.
Okay.
So that's my Miley Cyrus spiel. We also have some Taylor Swift news for all you Swifties out there.
Oh, that's Taylor... what Tease Whizzle means.
Yes.
I was like, who is this artist? And why are we reporting this? How would I know?
right. Everyone in the world is alive knows yeah, that?
I did much. Not.
All right, okay. Denmark, catch up.
No, now you yeah. know, the more you know. Yeah. Anyway, Taylor Swift released her newest single off of her 1989 album. The song is, well, the music video is for the song Wildest Dreams, which is a very interesting pick because we're still kind of winding down from summer. So I really thought she was going to go with something a little bit more fun and kind of release something like Wildest Dreams, which is a ballad kind of closer to winter time because it would definitely fit more of that season. But I digress. The music video is beautiful. It stars Scott Eastwood, who is, of course, Clint Eastwood's son, and he was also in The Longest Ride with Britt Robertson. And they play these 1920s glamorous movie stars that are shooting this film in the safari, and they're in love, and there's giraffes, and there's lions and tigers, and it's beautiful. And they're acting out this love story, but plot twist, Taylor Swift is secretly in love with Scott Eastwood, but she can't have him because he's already got a girlfriend. So the story kind of just goes from there. And it's just, it's beautiful. Like, it's just so well good. Done. If you haven't seen it already, head over to HiveBull.com and check it out. You will not be disappointed, especially if you're a fan of Taylor Swift. She's just been doing some great stuff with music videos. So that is all I have to say about that. Thank you for letting me rant about my music.
Awesome. this is so pretty. I love this. And that's actually funny because Wildest Dreams is like definitely not my favorite song on 1989, but I really, really like the film clip. Although, to quote a friend of mine, Taylor, you have so much money, buy a better wig, which is true. Like, the wig in this is not it's not good. Okay, but to wrap up the show, we have Harry Potter news because yay! What would it be without
it's
Harry
September
Potter?
September 1st. Well, it's September 2nd here, but for you guys, it's right. September 1st.
It is September 1st somewhere as we record this. So J.K. Rowling took to Twitter, because that is her primary method of communication these days, to let us know that James Sirius Potter would have been going to his very first day at Hogwarts, which is exciting. And then she jumped back on to let us know that he had been sorted, to nobody's surprise, into Gryffindor, but that Teddy Lupin, who was the head boy and a Hufflepuff, was very disappointed. And, of course, Teddy's mother, Chunks, was also Hufflepuff, but this is the
Hufflepuff
first we're hearing
pride.
That yay! He was. So, yes. Yeah, it's just always something fun, something new, and it wouldn't be hype if we didn't talk about Harry Potter at some
of
point.
Course. That's nice. So true. Okay, so that's the end of the news. Thank you for listening to us talk about all that stuff. Now, moving into TV show of the week, we only have two this week, and Pam is going to start us off, kind of going off what you were just talking about with the VMAs.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and keep this brief, but unless you were living under a rock, you know that the VMAs happened this last weekend, so they aired on Sunday. They're MTV's Video Music Awards, for those of you guys who don't know, and Miley Cyrus hosted this year. She was like the first proper host in about 3 years, and the show was, as you would expect, just a train wreck, but not in a bad way. Like, there's just so much drama. I couldn't even. If anybody was on social media, you probably saw pretty much all the stuff that happened. So there was some stuff with Kanye. Taylor kind of got her revenge-ish for his I'ma Let You Finish speech when she presented him with the Visionary Award this year. And she did a nice little throwback to that. But of course, Taylor is Taylor, and she kept it really classy. And somebody that did not keep it classy, well, two people that didn't keep it classy were Miley and Nikki, who kind of just let their feud that's been going on in the news lately kind of come to light. And there were some words that were exchanged.
Rebel Wilson's reaction to it was the best.
Everybody's reaction to this was crazy.
Okay, but...
Because Rebel's in the back, and you see her face just go, whoa.
Right, but let's all be clear that everyone should be 100% on Team Nikki in this situation, and I don't have enough time to talk about
I don't even know what the drama is.
Miley Cyrus is a train wreck, and Nicki Minaj is the queen, and,
in a nutshell, she
had a total right to call her out, because basically Miley
We'll just recap very quickly because I know we have to wrap things up. But what happened was Nikki spoke out about the fact that there's a lack of diversity in the people that not only get nominated, but also win these kind of awards, which, to be fair, are fan voted. But, you know, that is just a little tidbit on the side there. So she, you know, after her music video for Anaconda, which is one of the most popular music videos of the last year, didn't really get kind of the recognition they deserve. She kind of went off on Twitter and started talking about how the industry only favors a certain kind of female that's more along the lines of a Taylor Swift or a Miley Cyrus. And then Miley decided, well, she was asked, of course, but she kind of put her two cents in, and it was something that Nicki did not really like. So if you're interested in reading more about that, I would highly recommend you look up Miley Cyrus and New York Times and Nicki Minaj on Google, and you'll kind of see where the whole thing started from. Other than that, Billboard.com has a really good kind of anthology of everything that has transpired between the two of them in the last couple of weeks. So if you're interested in learning more about how that went down, definitely head over there. Maybe we can put a link in the show notes for that. Other than that, go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to say, if it's speaking of Nicki, like, if you're going to watch one performance from the VMAs and you're like just interested, you have to watch her opening number for the VMAs, because it
was the opening number
astounding.
Was good. I was going to say that, and also Justin Bieber performed for the first time in like years and years, and he's kind of turned over a new leaf. So if you're looking for performances to watch, definitely check that one out too, because he kind of had a moment in and of himself.
Oh my goodness, that moment.
So yeah, that kind of wraps up VMA news. I tried to keep it as short as possible, but I'm sure even if you didn't watch, you kind of know exactly what went down, because social media was kind of going crazy during this. Yeah. So.
Awesome. And Hannibal wrapped up last week, even though we kind of spoke about it last week already, but they had its finale. I've seen the GIFs.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about it because, I mean, if you haven't watched it, like, and you're a Hannibal fan, you need to watch it immediately because you don't want to be spoiled on this. But I guess just generally, I was really happy with the finale. I think it was very Hannibal appropriate. It was very, like, character appropriate for all of the characters that we've seen. The things that I talked about last time that I was a little worried about for the finale in terms of like the queer baiting and stuff like that, totally well done. Very, very well done. And it, even though, you know, as far as we know, this was the series finale, ended on a bit of a cliffhanger. So that's always good.
Sorry,
so,
I laughed.
Yeah, that's all I'll say. But definitely I was amazed and shocked and very, very happy with it. And I'm looking forward to going back and watching the rest of season three, because I think I mentioned I kind of missed a few episodes in there. But yeah, if you haven't watched Hannibal, you should go and watch it. It's one of the most beautiful shows that has been on TV recently.
Mm-hmm. And we're still going to do our article, right?
Oh, yeah. We should totally do that.
Awesome. Okay, so that's it for TV Show of the Week. It's still summer, so there's not a lot of shows. Although it is September, so shows are going to start coming back. Until then, luckily, you can't watch TV, but you can go on Hypebol and read lots of awesome articles, mostly about Harry Potter.
Is that the transition?
That's the transition.
Yeah, it's out on Hypebol time. I get to talk again. So I guess we'll start with Harry Potter because where else? We have a few things for Harry Potter this week, kind of around the 1st of September, going back to Hogwarts. So that's fun.
And again, we had, back to Hogwarts.
Yeah, something a little different for us. We had a really fun article about some of the cinematography of the Harry Potter films. So, you know, we talk a lot about
really
like...
Awesome.
Book to film changes and characters and plot and everything, but the films themselves are kind of an art form. So for those who
I love
are,
the kind of
well, I mean, some are better than others, but you know, there either way, there are some very beautiful shots across them. Oh no, the phone call!
Oh no, right now. Okay, I'll do it.
I'll be back.
So Marima just faked a phone call because she doesn't want to have to talk about her own story. So the next up in Hot on Hypebol is some quote unquote gratuitous self promotion. Marima is a recommending her own article, which is fantastic. It's another theory on Hypebol. We've been posting some different Harry Potter fan theories that are awesome, and this one, I love it. It's a fan theory which suggests that Ginny would have actually been the one to kill Voldemort if Harry had died in Deathly Hallows, so if he'd not come back from the train station. So the fan theory states that Neville would take out Nagini, Molly would take out Bellatrix, and then Ginny would come in with her love from Harry and her own connection to Tom Riddle and the whole first daughter, seventh child of a seventh child, and kind of step up and kill her, him. And I love this theory so much because I love Ginny, and I know Marimer does too. And this is just, this would have been another way to suddenly take someone out of vague obscurity and give them the sort of the power that was kind of hinted at. Awesome theory. You can go read about it on Hyperbole. And then another article, a special guest article from a student at Hogwarts who was very, very kind and wrote us a fan-submitted article. Ashley Bones from Hufflepuff talks about why she's happy to be back at Hogwarts and she's happy not to be going to school with Harry Potter. And you can check that out on Hyperbole. Now, some non-Harry Potter stuff, because we do still occasionally post non-Harry Potter stuff on Hypeable. There is an article telling us what to expect for American Horror Story Hotel. There is an interview with Lily Tomlin, who stars in Grandma, and director Paul Weitz. That is awesome. You guys should go check that out. Interviews are always great. That one was done by Marco. And we have a Game of Thrones Season 5 caption contest. And you can win a download of Game of Thrones Season 5. So that's pretty awesome. You can find all that and much more on Hyperbole.com. And now to wrap up the show, we have listener feedback, which we're just going to rush through because we have so much. So the first comment, Pam.
Sure. This one's from Shanna. She wrote to us on the show notes from last week's episode, which is always a good way to get in contact with us. She says, just watched the finale of Hannibal and oh my God. So I think Marima would agree with you.
Yes,
there, Shanna.
Marima just came 100%. Back just as I finished. Mm-hmm. So the next comment, Kyle, can you get that one?
Abso-freaking-lutely. The next comment, I have to scroll down to the comment section. Sorry. The next comment is from James L. And he says two things. As a fellow Australian, I love every episode of Hype, but Marima makes an episode just that little bit funnier. Keep up the great shows.
Yay!
Second, you mentioned Fear the Walking Dead on this episode, which I was initially hesitant about as I thought it was going to be more just the same. But after your recommendation, I watched it and God, it was good. I loved the new take on the world. Would definitely recommend it for everyone. I agree. Marima's take on everything just makes things better. Yep.
I think it's the accent, guys. What can I say?
Yep.
It's amazing.
I'll grab this one from Allison. Allison said, I haven't played Zelda in forever, but it was always one of my favorite games. I could see it being made into a pretty good movie if the right team is behind it. Whenever I think of it, I can only picture Thomas Brodie Sangster as Link. And if that were to happen, I would probably be behind it 100%.
Such
that is the
casting.
Best casting I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So perfect.
It is so
good.
Oh
my God. And he hasn't aged in like 5 years either. So you've got a bit of time to make that, like, get that movie happening.
And you would just see him like rolling around going, yeah,
oh,
they would have to do that. All right. So Ash Child, I'm going to ask, who wants this one? You have to do an impression.
Don't you have to take it?
No.
I think you have to.
Yeah, no one is going to attempt that, so.
Oh, she'll be so disappointed.
I'll set you up.
Okay.
It was so nice to hear Selena speak Danish.
Okay. Jeg forstår alt hun sa, selvom jeg norsk. That was no
good. I'm trying to say that out loud. I dare you, Hype. Anyway, can't wait for Ready Player One episode, now that I've finally read it and loved it, of course.
Yeah, what was that, anyway? What did she say?
She said, I understood everything she said, even though I'm Norwegian. So it was actually in Norwegian.
Oh.
Because I totally speak Norwegian, right, Ash Child? It was so good. I lived there for 2 years and I still don't. All right. So thank you so much for those comments. We have a few from Twitter, too. I'm just going to rush through them now. Carlos suggested The Fifth Wave, that we should watch the trailer because it looks really good. And in other news, Swords are in, I guess. And he wants us to talk about Apple original content, which we did. So there you go. Checklist complete. Sarah says to me, don't let them tell you you're wrong. I always preferred Legolas too. So there you guys, in your faces. And our last comment is from... just sliding by. So the last comment is from Ingeborg, and she actually, I wanted to just really quickly point this out, we're going to put this in the show notes too, that she does a video blog. She's half Norwegian, half British, and she lives in Denmark, and she has this video blog just about being her and being bilingual and all those things, and she included us in her new video blog of her August favorites. She included us. Aww. And Millennial Show, and a third show.
Elokhart.
I didn't click on it. Okay, yeah. So
Elokhart.
Elokhart. Yeah, We Were Liars.
We Were Liars, right. Which is an amazing
which
book.
Which I really want to read, actually, yeah.
So she has great taste.
She does. And so you can check that on YouTube. We'll include it in the show notes. Really nice vlog, and I'm glad that I watched it. And thank you so much for doing the shout-out, because we really appreciated it. It made us very, very happy. So thank you so much to everyone who left comments for us. If you want to weigh in on the topics we discussed today, or if you have anything you'd like us to bring up or general feedback for us, you can find us on hyperbole.com, which is hyperbole.com. You can find us on Twitter at hyperbolehype, and you can find us on Instagram at hyperbolehype. That's the end of the show. See you on Friday for our Ready Player One special. My name is Selena.
I'm Pamela.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Marimo.
Bye, everyone.
Hakuna Matata. Er de klogeste ord.
Hakuna Matata. Klogere end du tror.
Så tag det roligt.